for literally the exact end of August. It's Video Games Hot Dog. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And this is Video Games Hot Dog, episode number 19. How you guys doing?
Pretty good, pretty good.
We're barely legal.
I think we're going to have to skip the non-video game section because we have not done a single interesting thing since the last time we recorded a show. I'm just kidding. We did an interesting thing. We did a thing that was interesting to us. It was difficult. Things that are difficult are interesting, right? Like childbirth is interesting.
Well.
Genocide is pretty interesting.
Somebody else's taxes aren't interesting, and they're probably pretty hard.
Yeah. Well, they're interesting, like if it's like you figure out exactly how much money they spent on hookers and blow.
Can you write that off?
I think so.
Okay.
If you're a congressman.
Oh, right. Lobbying.
So we ran in a circle, a 93-mile circle around a mountain.
Yep.
And it was fun. We carried a bunch of heavy shit on our back.
Including a bunch of whiskey.
You know, on the Monday show, I characterized this. I was trying to figure out how to describe the exact way in which we're fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Because I said, all right, imagine that somebody says, all right, Riff, the most beautiful woman in the world totally wants to fuck you. And she is in this building. She's on the 250th floor. The office that she is in is locked. Here's the key. It weighs 40 pounds. The elevator's broken. I think you would just turn around and leave.
Well, yeah.
You're fucking crazy. You have to be fucking crazy to walk up 250 flights of steps carrying a 40-pound key just to fuck the most beautiful woman
that
in the world.
And that's just a single day.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, sometimes, hey, do that 12 days in a row.
Sometimes you get up to the top and be like, oh, actually, sorry, she's on the ground floor.
Oh, also, it turns out the girl is...
she's in another castle.
The girl is actually a fucking waterfall filled with mosquitoes.
Or a bear.
Yeah, that too. We saw some bears. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Those of you who are listening to this after having listened to the Kingdom of Loathing podcast, gonna hear some of this
it's
shit
like
twice.
Deja vu.
And you know what? We spent a couple hours working in between the recording of these two podcasts, so fuck you. I don't remember what we said. Oh, Christ. It is like an hour past my bedtime because while we were out on the mountain, we were going to bed at the time that the
crack
sun stopped being in the sky and then getting up as soon as it started again. Often not even in the sky. Often it would be like, okay, well, the sun is clearly somewhere because I can see some light and the mosquitoes have woken up.
Oh, in the morning.
We were so deep in a mountain valley. We were so far behind a ridge. Eight Ball Ridge, I think they called it. We did see some waterfalls.
Yep.
There were some prairies. You have a new favorite flower.
I do have a new favorite flower.
Sissy.
Did you go
pretty awesome.
Chasing any of those waterfalls?
I didn't. Every time that came up, I said, you know what, guys? I'm just going to stick to the rivers and the lakes that I'm used to.
Yeah. My new favorite flower is the subalpine lupin. I didn't actually have a favorite flower before, so it's my only favorite flower, I guess.
Got slightly more into dudes while you were on this trail. I know that you were forced to hang out with...
Do dudes like flowers?
Me and Sorab. No. Guys who like dudes like flowers. That's the point I'm trying
to make. So dudes
seriously?
Equals flowers.
Yeah, dudes are like flowers. They have a pistol, some kind of a stamen.
Pow!
Yeah. I had some expensive shitty beer in the one place that sold beer on the trail.
Mm. They have, there's a bar on
the
hiking trail?
Yeah, it was a bear bar.
It wasn't really on the trail. They didn't serve beer to bars and bears.
There was a visitor center like a mile off the campsite on day eight. And we were like, you know what? On the off chance that visitor center has beer... And also because our food is there for the next 4 days, we're going to walk to that visitor center. Rangers called our emergency contact like 5 or 6 or 7 days into the trip, left a garbled message about how we had left some broken equipment in a bucket. It turns out somebody else had left some of their broken equipment
in our
bucket.
Because it wasn't ours.
Yeah. It's like broken stove parts. We didn't have a broken stove. We didn't have any stove.
Yep.
I guess the stove that we took was broken by virtue of not existing.
Yeah.
That's very philosophical.
I took no tea.
Yeah. Our car was broken. That's for sure.
Man, the guy that usually carries shit around for me wasn't doing his job. Wasn't pulling his weight or mine. Anyway, that was a mountain.
Yep.
What else have we done? Riff, you've been reading books?
I've been reading books.
Reader's Digest?
No, the actual full books. which is cool on the one hand, but on the other hand, you don't get to read about all those funny things that happened to soldiers.
Were they digital books or physical books?
They were digital books. I've been reading on the iPad.
Okay. Have you been purchasing them from the... from some sort of legitimate source?
Yes and no.
Okay.
The first book I read was Kraken by China Meville, and which is almost exactly the same as Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere. So if you liked that, you'll like this.
Wait, is it literally like about a secret world that exists in the London Underground?
Not in the London Underground. And all of the names of the stations
are actually based on girls Neil Gaiman wants to fuck.
It's about like the secret societies of people who know how to use magic and worship strange cults that live in London and nobody knows about them.
Okay.
And there is a character who is of normal society who through strange circumstances gets wrapped up in the movements of these underground, but not tube underground.
Is there a girl people. Named Door?
No.
Is there a girl named Hole?
There is
a... Is Courtney Love a character in this book?
There is a giant pickled squid.
Okay. Do they eat it?
No.
Okay. Is it so it's pickled like a baby?
It's pickled like, yeah, like
it's pickled like a drunk baby.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it one of the central characters?
It is the major plot MacGuffin.
I see.
Major plot MacGuffin, reporting for duty.
Where I was going with that is... I wanted to buy the ebook,
yep.
But the ebook cost more than physical copies of the book that I could find. So I said, all right, screw you guys. And I bought the cheapest used physical book I could find and then just downloaded the ebook.
Yeah, I am extremely frustrated that the ebooks cost more than the physical books in a lot of cases. Like, if they cost
Does
the
it
same,
bother you that,
if it cost the same, I would be okay with it. I think.
I mean, audiobooks cost 10 times.
They are much more work
as a book.
Yeah,
they are much more work than a book.
No,
they're much more work than producing a book.
That is not true at all.
They are though.
That is absolutely not true. So you are saying that they're way more writing a book and then reading the book. It is more effort for someone. It is more effort for
if I'm downloading an audiobook,
Jean-Claude Van Damme to read. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell aloud than it was for Stephanie Meyer to write Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell in the first place.
If I am downloading an audiobook,
I don't believe you.
It costs way more in bandwidth, let's say.
You and your hippie liberal sensibilities.
Anyway,
don't make any sense.
Audiobooks are a different creature than books, but like the book is.
We saw some audiobooks on the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were living, they were frolicking in a stream.
They were different creatures than books.
There were no fish in the streams, because apparently fish don't like to hang out inside glaciers.
Yeah. Oh.
So these rivers are totally without fish.
The glaciers on this mountain, there were like the ones at the very top were like pristine and like had that blue tint to them. And the ones like that were like at our level, down at like 6,000 feet or whatever, were the dirtiest pieces of crap.
It was
depressing.
It was like a really cold sideways bog of eternal stench.
Yeah.
Like you're looking at this rock face, this just like sort of sheer cliff made of muddy ice, which literally would occasionally just belch forth some disgusting brown water.
Awesome.
It was interesting, but like, man, that's not what glaciers look like in those magazines I found under my dad's bed. My dad had a lot of glacier porn. It took a really long time for anything to happen.
Yeah. It's like
500 page photo spread. The time lapse. Anyway.
Yeah.
Audiobook?
Yeah.
Red Kraken started reading Game of Thrones again, and I'm about a third of the way through the third book now.
Okay. Is it good?
Yeah, it's quite good. It's good to the point where I'm not sure I want to watch the HBO series.
What?
Because I'm afraid that...
It'll spoil stuff?
Well, no. I don't think the series... I think the series doesn't
like
even
naked
finish
girls.
The first book. I'm not sure I want to see someone else's interpretation of those characters that is different from the interpretation in my head.
I'm pretty sure
because otherwise you'll just never be able to stop seeing Jack Nicholson as Randall McMurtry.
Exactly.
You'll never stop seeing Samuel L. Jackson as Larry McMurtry's Lonesome Dove. what was his name? Randall McMurray?
In
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest,
maybe?
You're thinking of McMurphy's Mansion, wherein you have to turn the urn on account of sub aurum est.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was Mick something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
McDonald's.
Sure.
MacGuffin.
So you read Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You're reading Game of Thrones.
Well, you read the first book.
You're a nerd. You read the first two.
I've read the first two.
What I've heard about them is that they are a fairly well-reasoned mm-hmm. portrayal of what a world would be like if there was a little bit of magic in it.
Yeah.
Like, somebody who figured out magic, it's like, whoa, fuck, that is dangerous and crazy.
There is not a lot of magic or supernatural stuff in it. There's, like, just enough that it's still a fantasy book, but for the most part,
it isn't mostly just rape.
Right, because it's mostly like knights and armies and medieval people who are raiding.
We've actually
other
thought
towns
about this
and being at war, which also involves a lot of rape.
In the development of our next video game, we've talked about how in a world that has abundant magic,
in a world,
why aren't things just powered by wizards throwing fireballs in furnaces? You know,
yeah, yeah.
Right. Like,
so one way that you can justify that, I think, is that mana potions, though they are plentiful to you because you are collecting all of the treasure in the world and, like, completely destroying the economies of all of these tiny fishing villages that you get to, that magic is extremely precious. It's just that's all you see because you're just guzzling mana potions.
You could also theorize that there's the law of, like, conservation of energy still holds, and that there's something that the wizard is doing to create that fireball that is expending an equivalent of amount of energy.
Why couldn't you spend it on some other purpose? You know, we've talked a lot about, like, the fire department in this world, which is, like, just wizards. You know? Oh, water ball. Because why couldn't you make a water ball? You know, you could, like, you make a water bed.
Or,
like,
you know, just a giant...
I was like... I wonder why
suffocation force field dome.
Why did this firebed scroll get written? Oh, so I can change it and make a waterbed.
Huh.
Firebed would suck.
Yeah.
Although, it wouldn't have any lice on it.
It'd be pretty hot. It'd be like a pyre. You could use it for your Viking funeral.
Wouldn't be all greasy like a waterbed usually is.
Right.
You know, really probably any rubber bed.
Yeah.
Though I don't think the water has anything to do with it. If you filled a waterbed... What if you filled a waterbed with, like, a non-Newtonian solid?
Ooh.
Like water, half cornstarch?
Half water, half cornstarch, yeah. Huh. What would happen? It's like, you'd jump on it, and it would just break your feet.
And then
you could lay on it, and it'd be too soft, but if you jumped on it, it would be too hard.
Yeah.
So you have to vibrate it just the right frequency for it to be perfect.
Yeah. Because if you vibrate it, you get those weird spikes.
Yeah.
You put a giant speaker under it,
yeah.
So it just keeps hurling you out of bed in the middle of the night whenever there's a big bass spike.
Huh.
Cool. I'm trying to think what else happened besides that fucking hike. And we were out there for so long that started to seem like the world, and this started to seem like a weird thing that would start happening when we got back.
Oh, you
instead of
went native, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
It was interesting. We spent like half a day in Seattle on the tail end of the trip. And
I begun to understand why agoraphobia is named after the agora, because we went to this crazy street market and it was totally overwhelming.
Oh,
after
I thought it
spending...
was named after those sweaters.
Yeah.
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 Those two. You buy those at the sweater market.
Alpacaphobia. Afghan philia.
Yeah.
Diet Hansen soda, huh?
Yep.
Diet soda.
PBR, huh?
Yeah. It's delicious. Straining it through my new mustache. I grew a mustache while we were on the mountain.
Yeah, you've kept your beard to some extent.
Yeah. I started growing it out before we left because my girlfriend was out of town for a while, and I was like, you know, I'd rather deal with the itchy, annoying part of this when I'm at home instead of out in the woods when a million other things are going to be annoying. Little did I know, eventually, just moment-to-moment life gets so unpleasant that you don't notice... really any individual annoying thing.
You're just one gigantic mosquito bite.
Getting into a car, you realize how bad you smell.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
You weren't aware of it so much before.
We probably got hundreds of mosquito bites each, but there was like never a point where we were like, ah, fuck, my mosquito bites itch.
I don't think it was hundreds. I think I got maybe between one and two dozen mosquito bites.
What? No.
Yeah.
Hundreds. There was a time when Sorab smacked me on the face because there were 4 mosquitoes biting the same spot on my cheek.
Yeah. Yeah. There were like 4 on the back of my leg at one point that I smacked all at once. It was really gross.
7 in one blow. You're a brave little Taylor.
Yeah. You're right. They never really got to the point where they itched. Yeah. It just wasn't a big deal.
I think it is because like there was just so much filth and discomfort that you just start to tune it out.
Hmm. Yep.
You know, it burns out your annoyance receptors.
So, but I mean that makes a lot of like, you know, the medieval sort of portrayals where they're just filthy and they just smell and stuff. You just get used to it.
Yeah. You have lice and it just doesn't make sense. I mean, like, you know, 100,000 years ago, it wouldn't have made a whole lot of sense for us to just be miserable. Like, if you were too irritated by how bad you smelled to fuck, then that's
going
to
be debilitating
disadvantage for the species, right? Yeah. So, like, yeah. All right.
Yeah. Getting back to nature. Woo-hoo.
So have you guys been playing any video games?
Not a whole lot. Mainly I've been reading, because I have this debilitating condition where once I start reading a book, I can't put it down again until I have actually fallen asleep. So I will sit and read a book for 6 hours.
Do you do that thing that like Edison did where you'd fall asleep in a chair with a book in one hand and when the book hit the floor, it wakes you up so you know to read some more?
A book in one hand and a steel ball in the other and steel plates on the floor? Yeah.
A yo-yo in one hand and a steel ball in the other hand.
Okay.
So that whenever the steel ball hits the floor, you jerk awake and do a cool yo-yo trick.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. And then you film it and put it on YouTube.
Yeah, that's how Edison got to be really good at yo-yo tricks.
Hmm.
We all played, right before we got on the air, we all played a game of Zen Wars.
Yeah,
a
multiplayer game of iOS. Rampart Tower Defense.
Seems pretty cool, but it controls kind of awkwardly.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how not terrible it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has the same problem as Rampart does in multiplayer, though, which is in a 3-person battle, you're so cramped that it's like, all right, well, I guess my castle is so good that I lose because there's no way for me to actually fix it.
Yeah, and the fact that the propensity towards worse and worse pieces as the game goes on is really kind of frustrating.
Does that actually happen round to round?
It seemed like it. I mean, maybe I'm.
It did seem like I was getting more twisty and T-shaped blocks in the later and more like just 2-piece bars in the beginning.
I've not played a tremendous amount of it single player. I think you've played a lot more of it than I have.
I'm only like 4 or 5 levels into the campaign.
Like, it kind of scratches that Rampart itch, but I'd kind of rather just have Rampart on a PC, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
the iOS controls are just not quite
They're really not. Like you were saying, the number of times when you want to scroll to another part of the screen, but you end up just rotating the piece instead because the controls for the piece are really big. But then if they were smaller, you'd always be scrolling around when you try to rotate it. So
It's a tough call. I appreciate the design challenges, but and the art is also not that great. They could have gotten rid of
that. Was all right.
Some of the like attempt to make it cute and just had it been sort of more informative,
more functional.
Yeah. And I think it would have been better.
Yeah. For who though?
For somebody who wants to play the game.
Yeah.
It's like hard to tell what's going on sometimes because of their like...
Oh, you probably want Angry Birds stuff. To just be like ASCII.
Yes, I want ASCII Birds.
Did you play many games while we were out in the woods?
No, because I was early on, I was trying to conserve my battery. And then when I started realizing that I had so much battery that I didn't need to conserve anything, I started watching more like movies or listening to music to go to sleep.
I barely played any games, but when I did, so there was a time when
you don't always drink beer.
there was a toilet at one of the campsites that was just a kind of a big box with a toilet seat on top of it, just out.
Yeah, like with no walls. It's like an outhouse without the house.
And other people described that as being like really nice and really relaxing, but I sat there and I sat there and I sat there and I sat there and I was like, "You know what? I know I have to poop."
But all these bears are watching me.
I don't remember how to make the poop come out. And then I was like, oh yeah, iPhone games. Yeah. So I pulled out my phone and played a few rounds of Amazing Breaker, and then the poop came out.
You tweeted about it.
It was enough to distract me. There was only one time, there was only one campsite where Kevin randomly checked and figured out that there was 3G access. Somehow we could, it was in a direction that was facing a tower that was close enough to the mountain that it worked.
Yeah.
All I did was text my loved ones. yep. to let them know that I was still alive. You did all kinds of, you fucking bought and sold some stocks and I don't know. You were like, got to buy stock in bug spray because we're buying a lot of it for next time. Instant mashed potatoes.
I took DEET, 100% DEET with me, and yeah. it worked pretty well, but it makes you feel really, really gross to put it on. Huh. It's like super greasy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm going to cover my entire body with poison.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I do feel like any problem, the solution to which is covering yourself in poison is probably a problem I would rather have than the solution. So I played a little bit of Amazing Breaker. I beat it, and then I started through from the beginning again, trying to get 3 stars on every level.
What is Amazing Breaker again?
It's that game where you're like throwing bombs, different kinds of bombs at this big glass sculptures.
You're talking about that.
It's so pretty. It's so pretty that it makes me enjoy playing it more than I would if
just
it were
the aesthetics.
If it were like completely abstract. Like it's an okay game.
Somebody asked me the question, like, does the theme of a board game really matter? And I was like, you know, it really does.
Yeah, it totally does.
Like, Dungeon Lords is so much more fun to me because of the pieces. And
Dungeon
the
Lords
theming.
Is more fun to you than Agricola because you like a dungeon more than you like a farm. Yeah. I think I secretly like a farm more than I like a dungeon.
I think you do. Yeah. Which is weird.
The thing that I don't like about...
You know, what you want is skeletons to overrun your farm.
What board games have you been playing 3 years ago? The thing that I didn't like about Dungeon Lords was... I get that Agricola at the end is like weird... jockeying for score if you're trying to play it optimally, but Dungeon Lords, the weird jockeying for score starts early and never stops, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I never feel like I'm actually building a cool dungeon because building a cool dungeon is secondary to like doing weird shit that nobody else is doing so that you will get those victory points.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure. I mean...
In a way that in Agricola, it's not. Like, Agricola, the scoring system rewards you for having a cool farm, and a cool farm has a little bit of everything on it, right? Yeah. Like, you broaden to increase your score instead of generalizing further.
I mean, you kind of need to do that in Dungeon Lords, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to try... playing a version of Agricola where instead of building a farm, you were building a sweet space station or something.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Whatever.
Just pretend you're building a farm. Like, pretend that your space station got hit by some kind of disaster and knocked everybody back to the farm age.
I like the space station a lot, actually. Yeah, that would be a cool theme. Because Galaxy Trucker works pretty well, but I don't know that, like, peasant farmer would. Or
I like 30% designed a dice game about defending a space station by reactivating derelict spaceships and bringing their systems online to fight the other derelict spaceships that your enemy space station is
is your opponents.
I wrote down a lot of stuff out in the woods. I would see a thing and I'd be like, I wish there was a dungeon in there. How would that work? And then I'd think about a dungeon in there. I wish there was a dungeon made of columnar basalt.
Sure.
I spent a lot of time while you guys were gone reading about what's coming up in the new Minecraft patch that they were showing at PAX.
How much time can you spend? Like, I feel like I got a pretty good handle on everything that's going on with the new Minecraft update by watching, like, a 2-minute video.
Yeah, I mean, I watched, like, a half-hour video that was Notch live broadcasting the demo. And then I spent a lot of time looking at the Minecraft forums and just being exasperated with the people on the Minecraft forums. So probably I spent a lot more time than I really needed to or should have.
Did he talk about the fact that he's not going to be releasing Minecraft on Steam?
He did a blog post about it.
Yeah.
Why is he not releasing Minecraft on
Steam? Because it doesn't... There's the contract would preclude him like
from
offering
in-app purchases,
like,
and stuff.
In-app purchases that were also available on the website to people who hadn't bought it through Steam.
It's
or
sort of
something like that.
I think like it's when we were talking to people at Zynga and they
can't have a game on both MySpace and Facebook unless they completely separate it, because if they have a game on Facebook, they are required to use Facebooks or whatever
are
called.
They basically just have to cut Facebook into all profits. Right. And so they either lose 30% on their games that they host themselves, or they just fragment the community entirely.
It makes me sad, the stuff that seems to be going on with Steam right now, because like Steam,
EA is not releasing their stuff on Steam anymore.
EA has decided to release a competing platform, and like, why wouldn't you? You know, it's like you can't be mad at them for not wanting to like just give money to their competitors,
right?
But at the same time, it has been so fucking nice for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Whenever I want to play a video game, I just go to Steam, buy it, don't have to type my credit card number in again. It downloads it, downloads all the updates, and then I just fucking play it, and it's there.
It's interesting, because, I mean, that's the same model that, like, iTunes has and, like, the App Store
has. Oh, right. But, I mean, everybody's going to get all pissed off about it. Like, oh, Apple's trying to control our destiny.
I mean, but like,
with the App Store thing, why is
Steam? Why is Steam any different though? It's like
the
same idea.
You know what platform I never have any fucking problems with is my telephone. Every time I want to buy something, like a game or an application, I just buy it, and it takes a little while to download, and then I run it, and it fucking works. And if I threw my phone into a volcano, I could get a new phone and then just get all my shit back.
Yep.
You know, maybe not my save games or whatever, but. Yeah, and it's, you know, I hate to see, after all of this evolution in PC games towards it being really easy to use and convenient and straightforward and kind of unified, for it to just get all fragmented and shitty again. Because it's like, all right, well, now we just have to install every platform that there is if we want this
using
game.
Like, trying to play a game on your computer is like a platformer. You have to hop from platform to platform.
I think, and I, like... This is going to piss me off if I have to... I kind of want to play Mass Effect 3 when it comes out, but I really don't want to install EA's platform and make an account on it, but I probably have to, even if I go buy a boxed copy of the game.
I mean, you could get it on 360.
No. I'm not going to play... like...
Console?
No game that exists on both a console and a PC would I prefer to play on a console. Yeah. Like,
even if a bad PC port of an obvious console game?
That's a good question. Yes, because Oblivion was a bad PC port of a console game. And I'm not even going to say a good console game, because I don't know if it was any good. But I would still have rather played it
on the PC.
On the PC, even with the shitty interface affordances that I knew were there because of the console. I mean, Fallout 3 was just total console interface, but like it was fine on the PC. It bothered you. Like, looking over my shoulder, you were like, I don't see how you can stand this shitty interface.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's just really quick to get around in with the keyboard, and I don't know.
All right.
It's nice.
Okay.
I played some more of that Lost Earth Tower Defense.
Yeah, me too.
It's pretty good. Continues to be pretty good. I also bought this new Tower Defense game called Four. I don't know what it's called.
It's Four Wheel Truck Rally.
Yes. Yeah. Forza. The Link to the Past 4.
Huh.
It's Tower Defense. It's got like vectory graphics that are really cool, actually. Okay. When things explode, they explode in these like ghosty circuit board patterns that spread out from
them.
Yeah, I know, right?
I like Tron graphics. Yep. People should do that.
Yeah.
And there are four tower types, and that's it. And they all unlock pretty early. But every pair of tower types becomes a new tower type. There are fixed places. It's a fixed path game, and then there are also fixed points at which you can mount towers, some of which are joined. And you put two towers on a joined one, and one of them becomes like
towers, effectively.
One of them becomes like a support. Is it only 10?
Can you pair it with itself?
You can pair it with itself, and that becomes a different thing.
So that's 14.
So 14, yeah. But that's pretty good.
Huh. I've been doing that. In Lost Earth, I've been trying to get every achievement and perfect score on every level, and that is hard.
One thing I dislike about this four thing is that there seems to be in-app purchases, like microtransaction-y for the in-game currency that you use to unlock equipment and stuff.
Oh, jeez.
And the point at which that becomes important is the point at which I'm probably going to just stop playing the game, because I don't want to back.
You can grind.
You can grind it, but
yeah,
sucks. Not going to. It's not like once you've figured out how to beat a level. The other weird thing about this game is that the towers sell back for what they cost. And so in a lot of cases, your strategy is like looking at what the next wave is going to consist of and then selling a bunch of your towers and building more appropriate towers for the wave.
Wow.
And the more of that you have to do, the less fun I'm going to think it is. It so far has not been that big of a deal.
Can you pause and do it live?
Yeah, you can. You can pause and do it all. and it's, you know, it doesn't, there's not like a build time on towers. It's not like geodefense in that regard.
That's a little different.
You don't seem to have to do a whole lot of it. Like, there have been a couple levels where there were like three distinct phases to the level, and in like the second phase, there's a bunch of like swarm guys that you need AoE towers for, but then like, and then you'll usually have to kind of change things up when the boss comes onto the screen. So it seems like it's like just enough to be interesting, but they understood that that was going to be tedious if they made you do it all the time. So they didn't.
Played some Gargoyle's Quest.
Ooh, the Game Boy Gargoyle's Quest. Yep. Did you get a fingernail?
Got a fingernail. I got a gremlin stick.
Ooh.
Got some Wings of the Falcon.
Okay.
It's crazy nostalgic. It was one of my favorite Game Boy games, and booting it up and playing the first level, my fingers still remembered the pattern of taps and button pushes that you needed to cruise through that level.
That's awesome.
Pretty sweet. It's harder than I remembered. I mean, maybe my reflexes are a little slower because I feel like I didn't have as much trouble with the platforming when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But this is one of the rare platform games that I don't mind playing. It's the controls are really tight. There have been very few instances where I've died and thought it was unfair.
Yeah, it's good. Like, it is a game that is challenging, but you definitely feel like you fucked up when you die.
Yeah.
Which, was Ghosts and Goblins like that?
I don't remember.
Because, I mean, this is very much a Ghosts and Goblins game, right? Yeah. Like,
it
takes place
so hard.
In the Ghosts and Goblins world.
Yeah.
I never got good enough at it to know whether or not it was me or the game.
But I think the enemies are all predictable in Ghosts and Goblins, right? Like, there is nothing where you just get killed by a shitty die roll in the AI.
So hard. Yeah, it is really unforgiving.
You have to do a lot of memorization.
No.
Yeah, it's weird. The music is fucking great in Gargoyle's Quest, and the graphics for being a Game Boy game are really, really nice.
Like original Game Boy?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's fucking good, though.
Huh.
It's fun. I wish that there was a version of it. There was a Gargoyle's Quest for the Super Nintendo that I only ever played on an emulator. Like, I don't even think I knew it existed when I actually had a Super Nintendo that was hooked up to a TV.
I may have to find a copy of that, because that intrigues me. I didn't know about that.
I've several times in my life, I've started playing it. You know, now that I think about it, it might have like been on the Genesis or something. That wouldn't make any sense, would it?
I don't know.
Seems unlikely. Is it Capcom?
I believe so. I'm not positive off the top of my head.
Which, of course, stands for Connecticut Leather Company. I mean Tandy Leather. Sorry. I don't actually remember what Capcom stands for. We looked it up a little while ago.
Captain Commander?
Yeah.
At the edge of the world.
I wrote down something else that I played, and I don't fucking remember what it was.
Do you not have your list?
I don't.
I went to the iTunes store and saw that a game had pushed Angry Birds out of number one spot.
Ooh, yes. What game?
It's called Spy Mouse.
Oh, yeah. I've heard good things about that. I haven't tried it.
So it's by Firemint. They're the people that did Flight Control, which was fun.
Okay. Oh, it's like a stealth game.
Kinda, yeah. So you're a mouse.
Did you buy it?
I did. You like move around you sort of direct where the mouse is supposed to go by tracing a path. You're supposed to collect cheese and get out of the room by getting to your little mouse hole, but there are cats that can see you and chase you and stuff like that. Completing a level is not hard, but getting the badges is really pretty tricky.
Do you think that the guys who work at Firemint have sex with animals?
You mean, are they furries?
No.
Or do they dress up as animals?
No.
Animals into having consensual sex?
Oh, yeah. Okay, maybe, yeah. I think so.
It's possible.
I think that's a good theory.
Yeah.
We're going to call that Kevin's theory about the people who work at Firemint, brought to you by Kevin.
Where did this theory come from?
Yeah, I don't understand.
I don't know. It seemed original. Games are always about, you know, are they vores? Their games are always about, like, birds punching other birds.
Wait,
yeah.
What?
Flight control? Oh,
yeah. Okay, sorry. So they didn't make Angry Birds.
No.
Yeah, like I said, I'm tired and also kind of drunk.
Flight control, not Angry Birds.
Okay, that was about stewardesses.
It was about stewardesses.
Dressing up as bears.
Yes.
And eating harbor masters.
mostly.
Was Harbormaster even the same people?
I don't know.
Because Harbormaster was like boat control.
Was it?
Or like boat control 2, the Urquan Masters.
So I've only played through like the first half of the first
continents of the warring
first campaign or whatever. And
species.
It's fun, but I'm dubious. Like some of the levels are so hard to get all the badges. Maybe I don't need to get them all at one time, which I think is my problem.
You have to find the island where the Shofixti live. Japan.
And prevent them from running their planes into all the boats.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what I've been playing.
It sucks when you first find the precursor boat because it's just like a stick with a deck on top of it, and you don't actually get boat sides until you make it back to Earth and collect a bunch of wood.
I was a little annoyed in the game though that like there were two things that they were pushing pretty hard. One was an in-app purchase, like spend an extra dollar to buy this cat, which will help you, you know, defeat the levels.
That's been something I've been seeing a lot. And there's been like a lot of the single player RPGs that have been coming out have been like, you know, in-app purchases for experience boost potions and all of this. And I'm like, you know, for an MMO, that's fine. I totally down with that. But damn, don't chisel me on the gameplay on a single player game.
I think that this supports my theory that these games are too cheap.
That we feel like they're too expensive, or that they're trying to make some money.
No, that the games are too cheap for them to make back their development costs, and so they rely on these microtransactions.
That's probably true
to do it, right? Like,
what else? And then, they're pushing like the social aspect. They're pushing the like get your friends to download this game because like there's stuff in the game that is immediately available if you have local friends who have the game and you've checked in with them.
So I want to thank you for being a friend. Yeah. Let you know that if you threw a party and invited everybody you know, that I would show up, and even if I had
that
game, I would turn
snacks.
That feature off just because fuck that bullshit.
Yeah.
And the card attached would say, fuck you too, Kevin. So you're doing some ridiculous bullshit with your phone right now. Kevin got a new set of headphones.
Yeah.
And he is breaking the headphones in by playing the kind of music he likes at the volume he listens to music at, even though he's not listening to the music.
Headphones require breaking in like that?
I think that's what a crazy person will tell you.
Did you buy special vacuum-sealed platinum monster cable headphone audio jacks?
I'm beginning to think that Kevin will believe anything a crazy person tells him.
So I have spent a lot of time reading about headphones because I wanted good headphones.
Have you been reading about them in like really densely written mimeographed sheets that crazy people hand you in parking lots?
No. But there seems to be a consensus.
Oh, chick tracts? Was there a chick tract about how you're supposed to break in your headphones?
There seems to be a consensus that
the audio quality of
speakers is improved by warming them up with particular, like by actually playing, you know, the particular sound that you want to listen to.
So you went to MIT.
Yeah.
You know how a speaker works.
Kinda.
Explain to me a way in which it is remotely theoretically possible that what you're describing is actually doing
anything
to the speaker.
These are solid devices, right? So like they're gonna settle into.
They're not solid. No, there are no solid state speakers.
What are you talking about?
I don't think there are any solid state speakers.
They're actual physical devices. They're not just like digital things.
You're not saying they're solid state.
I'm not saying they're solid, but they're like physical devices that like they're gonna like their electrons are gonna get into particular configurations, right? Like it's like that, you know.
You know, you have to clear out the pipes so that the ones don't get caught or going around the corners.
we went to a restaurant, like after we got off the trail, we went to a restaurant and one of the Yelp reviews on the restaurant said their food is solid. And we were like, well, you know, after weeks of
dehydrated
trail applesauce, we could really look forward to some solid food right now. Okay. So, when I described our server problems to our buddy Damien, I said, I think going there and being near the database servers made this hard drive crash.
Yeah.
And he said, well, so these are physical devices that have been spinning at 7,200 RPMs for 6 years.
Yeah.
Right? To him, it does not seem inconceivable that they have worn little grooves around the bearings and that a slight change in air pressure causes a slight wobble that causes a machine that would not otherwise malfunction to malfunction because of those grooves that have been worn in, you know, some piece of metal inside the drive. So that it is not at all inconceivable that standing near a server could cause the hard drive to crash.
Sure. I mean, I guess that sounds logical, but I think I would expect the people that designed and built those servers to have taken that into account.
Not on the 5 or 6 year time scale, though.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, like those drives, like even a really, really good. I guess
if you're
good,
expected to replace them more often,
though. You definitely are. Like nobody banks
meantime to failure on hard drives
5 years. Like even on a good one, the meantime to failure is 5 years. Like it's, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that may not be true, but it's effectively true. Like hard drives are just bullshit. I'm really glad.
Wait, so you're saying that is a physical device that clearly could change state with some minor situation. So are you saying that in counterpoint? Are you saying that here's an example of where an idea that all I'm saying is there are people who are way more serious about this than I am.
Who are crazy. This is like the people locked in a box with pictures of Joe Biden, right? Like they're.
I am just following the advice of people who are more knowledgeable than I, right? Like, it doesn't hurt me to do this, so why not do it?
It hurts you in that it makes your friends think that you're a dipshit. And that will probably have some sort of, like, tangible negative impact on your life, dipshit. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you believe in these fairy tales about your headphones.
Oh, my God. Like... I don't understand why you are so like insistent that this is just bullshit when you have like no evidence one way or another that they like
okay
seriously like well, this is like home, this is just a ridiculous like criticism. That's what I don't understand.
Home,
if you were a fucking audio engineer and you're like, this makes no goddamn sense. I have built thousands of sets of headphones from, you know, parts that I've ordered. Then I'd be like, okay, well then, you know, you clearly have a point and this is dumb. But like, look, you don't know anything about them. So why are you even making this criticism? That's what I don't understand. Right? Like, that's
it's
like,
funny.
Yeah, I guess.
All right. So have we been playing anything else?
I haven't.
I played a little bit of the extremely lengthily titled Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor Overclocked on the 3DS, which is basically just an HD upgrade of Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor for the DS.
What kind of game is that?
It is a Japanese
RPG. Is that
the
creator's name in the title?
No, the Shin Megami Tensei is the overall series, which encompasses Shin Megami Tensei Persona 1 through 4 and Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journeys, and okay. there's a few other.
Are these the dating
sub-series sims? Within the, yeah, the Persona ones are the ones that are like RPG plus dating sim.
Okay.
And then Strange Journeys is JRPG plus first person dungeon crawl.
I see. Okay.
And this one is JRPG plus
eBay auction.
eBay auction and a tactical RPG.
Okay.
It's, you've got, instead of having like your three guys that you fight monsters with Dragon Warrior style, you have three guys who are each the leader of an individual squad that you move around on the map, Final Fantasy Tactics style, and then when they encounter another squad, a squad of monsters, it goes to a Dragon Warrior style fight between those two squads.
Huh.
There's some interesting little mechanics and stuff in it, but
and these are squads of cheerleaders we're talking about here, right?
Well, they're Japanese high school students. I haven't met a cheerleader yet.
What?
So they're gothic Lolitas.
Nah, they're more.
They're all wearing
their norms.
Cowboy, you know, cowboy they're hats standard, and
like Norm
platform shoes.
And yeah.
Norm.
Yeah. Norm Bates. From Cheers.
Norm Ratzenberger. I'm pretty sure that the way that they made the characters on Cheers is that they made up first names and then they each took one of the other actors' last names.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sure. But yeah, it's okay. I don't know if I had... The story is interesting because Alice has a really good track record on making interesting stories for these games, but I don't know if I have the patience to...
The only Alice game that I've played has been one of the Etrian...
To play through it all the way.
Odysseys.
Is it in English?
No story at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's a U.S. title.
This is a story of some people who killed the same fucking monster 10,000 times so that they could survive level 2.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. I mean, the Dragon Warrior-style combat is not very interesting combat. I mean, and they did some little tricks to make it a little more interesting. Like, at the beginning of a fight, it'll point out, like, three monsters that have skills that one or more of your team leaders doesn't have yet, and you can assign a team to that monster, and if that particular team is the team that kills that monster, then the team leader gets that skill. So there's some little extra strategic elements like that.
So you're, like, calling your shots?
Yeah. You're making your plan for that overall fight.
Based on how you're going to level up.
Yeah.
That's kind of
And things
neat,
like
actually.
Every monster squad is a squad of three, and the one in the middle
like
is the team leader.
Monster Squad starring Fred Savage.
And if you kill the team leader first, the other two monsters automatically die, but you only get half experience for them.
I think I was thinking of little monsters.
Want to kill the secondary ones first for
so
more
you
XP.
So that you get more XP, or you can... kill the middle one first so that the fight doesn't take as long and you're not in as much risk.
Oh man, that's a tough optimization choice. Yeah.
You were talking about some bullshit auction system that you had to go through
The linking theme with all the Shin Megami Tensei games is that your main dudes that you're fighting with are demons that you summon. And you but every sub-series has a different manner in which you acquire these demons. And the one for this one is basically you go on eBay and it updates every half hour of game time and there's some new monsters posted and you bid your monies against them against three like AI-controlled NPCs who are also bidding on this monster.
Demon-contained Bobcat would not bid again.
Yeah. So, I mean, that sounds interesting on the surface, but what it really boils down to is that instead of having a shop where you go and it says this demon costs this much yen and you pay it and get the demon, you've got a shop where here's a demon, you don't know how much it costs, tell me how much you're willing to pay for it, and you either bid more money than necessary, in which case you fucked yourself, or you bid less money than necessary, in which case you don't get the demon.
Can you save scum and or look at some sort of resource that tells you what the minimum you can bid is?
I feel like it's probably not that cut and dried.
You don't get to keep going back and looking at the auction and outbid the other people?
It happens in real time. It's like over like 5 seconds of time. It's like make a bid and then you punch in your number. It pauses for a little bit while you punch in your bid and then the NPCs go, oh, I bid 30 more and then I'll bid 50 more. And then when the timer runs out, everybody that has it, all you and all of the NPCs that have not hit their cash limit and dropped out of the auction get to make a final bid.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, so it's just... As a game designer, that sounds like a really interesting game element, but as a player, what is this benefiting me? This it just seems punitive for no reason.
We were talking about this beforehand, and it was like... It reminded me of the haggling minigame in Trade Wars,
yeah.
Which just always made me feel like I was getting fucked.
Yeah.
Like, I really wanted there to just be, like, just fucking tell me how much you will pay for this here, right? Like, we're in space, right? Like, why am I even talking to a fucking dude to sell these things? Why can't I just push a button to launch them down from my ship, right? It didn't take me any gas to get here. Where are you? Did you just come up to my ship to yell at me about how much you're not willing to pay for my... What were you even selling?
In like ore and stuff like that? Yeah. I felt like you could almost always haggle three times in Space Wars, Trade Wars, and that worked out just fine. This like bidding thing seems like, it seems like if it isn't, if it is just prescribed in advance, that somebody will just come up with a list of prices.
I think it's probably not flat prices, because the monsters have a slight variance in quality, and it probably generates like the, you know, this monster is worth X base, like
the budget.
Yeah, the this NPC will has a budget of plus or minus.
That's but tough. If you don't know that, I mean, like, I could see if you like ran into those dudes and interacted with them throughout the game, and you could like learn something about them, you'd be like, ah, oh, you know what? I know this guy says, well, I hate boysenberry flavored demons.
Exactly. Yeah. You'll know. That would be great.
You'll know
that based on, if you see him bidding on something, you're like, all right, I bet I can outbid him on this because he hates these kind of dudes. That would be awesome. But I'm not very far into the game. Maybe that happens, but I don't expect it to.
So I listened to this. I listened to this podcast while I was out on my trip, and I wanted to. I wanted to ask you guys this question that was from an experiment that these guys performed. It was like a game theory experiment.
Okay.
That the guy this there's a podcast called, and I found out about this because Kingdom of Loathing came up on it. They were talking to the guy that designed Thunderstone, the card game, and he talked about like Kingdom of Loathing being what he was thinking about when he was initially like theming the playtesting version of Thunderstone, which was pretty cool. But I went and listened to all the back episodes of this podcast, and in between the real episodes that they do, which are just about various like kind of high level abstract board game topics, one of the guys will play a segment that he did for a different podcast that was just like a kind of a game theory thing. So they set up an experiment where they told everybody, all right, you are going to be in a room with a bunch of other people. We are going to ask you all to pick a number between 1 and 100. Whoever's answer is the closest to 2/3 of the average answer wins $100.
Oh.
What number do you pick in that situation?
So you take all of the answers?
You take all of the answers and average them. Whoever's answer is the closest to 2/3 of that average gets all the money.
Wow.
Shit. I don't even know how to begin logicking that out.
So, I mean, like, if everybody did a real random distribution, the average would be 50.
Mm-hmm.
And 2/3 of that would be, right, you know, what, 33-ish or whatever the mm-hmm. 2/3 is.
Do we assume that everyone is smart enough to come up with that?
I don't know, right? So then if everyone's assuming that, so then if everybody then chooses 33...
Yeah,
that's the average, and 2/3 of that is 22.
Yeah,
and then if everybody thinks right, that, right. Right. So then, I mean, do you then choose one?
Like, well, so I'm clearly not going to get answers out of you guys.
Well, no, okay. So like, am I supposed to? You want an actual numerical answer?
I want an answer for you guys. I want an answer.
How many people are in the room? Does that matter?
No, I don't think it matters. I don't know. I don't know what the sample size was in the actual experiment.
I would probably not feel like thinking about it too hard and just vote whatever 2/3 of 50 is.
Right. I'd probably do 15.
Okay. So what they found was that there were spikes in the number of times that a given number was reported.
Right.
And they were spikes at 50 and then 2/3 of 50 and then 2/3 of that and then 2/3 of that and 2/3 mm-hmm. of that. And like what he talked about was like the Nash equilibrium is everybody picks zero. They have to give everybody the money because right. everybody's tied for winning. Right. But that's clearly not going to happen. Right. So the way that they interpreted this data was looking at the spike that was at 50 and then the noise in the graph accounted for about half of people. So they grouped those and called them level zero players, which is like players who were more or less just picking a number at random.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because 50 kind of doesn't make any sense. Like 50 right. is just right. a bad play.
Right.
33, they considered a level one. Like this was like a how many steps ahead are you thinking? This
right,
was
just right.
like, how do people approach problems like this when so for like a perfect information game, like what you are actually playing is predicting what your opponent's going to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So like somebody who picked 33, although he kept saying 37, and I was like, but I picked 33 as 2/3 of 50, and I really think that 33 is 2/3 of 50. I don't know why it was 37 in this thing. Maybe he was just saying it wrong. That means, so a level one player. So you assume that everyone else but you is really stupid. And so you play as though you're the only one who's like caught on to the trick. And then like a level two player guesses like 22. And
right.
And so it, probably then thinking that the rest of the players are a mix of level one and level zero players.
Yeah,
well, that's so why I was saying 15, because I figured two, like assuming that there's a smart group of people, you know, there's going to be some like staggering
2/3 of 22.
Yeah.
Like trying to work out a bell curve on how many people are going to have figured this out, how far along.
Yeah.
Right. I'm curious what the actual answer was in this distribution. I don't think he actually said in the thing. But I thought it was interesting.
I mean, it's probably going to be some number between 10 and 33, right? Like,
because right. I figured, I was like, well, you know, so I picked 33 when this was presented to me because I'm fucking terrible at games, right? And I figured Riff would probably player. Be one level past me and that you would probably say zero.
Well, but I wouldn't say zero because I assume that not everybody's going to do the reductive thing, right? Like, there's going to be some dumb people who just don't care. There's going to be people who just don't care and don't. And it's not that they're dumb. They just don't like whatever.
They don't like video games.
They don't like video games. So that's why I would do something low but not zero, probably.
So maybe you should guess that half the people are going to guess 50 because they're dumb, and half the people are going to guess 33 because they're one step above being dumb. And so what's the average person
saying
that?
22, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
That's a neat question.
It was. I was the Ludology podcast. Check it out. It's pretty good. It's dorky. To be sure, but the two guys that do it are very well spoken and
are they funny?
No, they are not. They are not funny.
All right.
It is.
Are they unfunny or are they serious?
No, they are not. They will every once in a while try and make a joke and it will fall on its face. But they it seems pretty well rehearsed actually, which is strange. Like I think they got a lot of notes.
I don't mind people being not funny. I just don't like it when they're unfunny.
it is not a thing that I listen to for like entertainment. It is right. I consider it one of the edification podcasts that I listen to, like Radio Lab or you know, even like This American Life is not entertaining enough. I feel like it's like, oh god, I'm taking my fucking medicine where I learn something about the world. All right, news in a moment. Hey, so I heard some stuff happened in the world.
Yeah.
What did you hear about, Kevin?
Well, apparently, this week, the early adopters, the 3DS ambassadors, can get to download their free games.
Riff's been doing some of that. There's
at
a
least
trick,
the NES games. Yeah, the scheme that they came up with to fix it so that some people could download these games for free, but not everybody could, is that they put the games into all those people's list of games that you have already bought. So
that seems clever, right?
Yeah. So to download them, what you do is you go into the 3DS shop and go into your 3DS...
already purchased stuff.
Yeah, go into your eShop settings, and it's got a thing for My Downloads, and then you re-download this game that you never actually downloaded.
But yeah. No, that makes sense. So then you can just always get it no matter when, and everybody can get it.
And when they eventually update them, you'll be able to pull the updates for free.
I'm curious as to whether or not mine triggered as whether I'm marked as an ambassador or not.
Well, now's when you find out.
I guess so.
Because you managed to actually activate your account, right?
Oh, I did, but I did it before the announcement, so I don't know.
I think it was just before.
I'm pretty sure.
Date,
I bet that how they knew whether you're an ambassador or not is whether or not you had generated this list of my 3DS eShop downloads. Like, if that list exists for them to put these games on it, then that's how they know that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you guys hear about the sort of scandal with GameStop and Deus Ex?
Yeah.
Oh, and taking the codes out of the boxes?
Yeah.
I don't know what those codes were for. They were coupons for some sort of...
OnLive.
What is that?
That is the thing that we were talking about that I couldn't think of the name of, where you play a video game remotely.
Yeah.
So it was like a coupon for that online service.
Oh, so because it was something that competed with GameStop. Yeah. I mean, GameStop are assholes. News at 11, right? Like, it's hard
but they actually opened up the product, took the coupon out, and then resealed it.
GameStop opens up everything that you buy there anyway.
Really?
Yeah, because nothing on their shelf has anything that's worth stealing in it, right? Like,
they don't hand you a closed box from behind the counter?
Every once in a while they do.
Yeah, sometimes they do, but I feel like that's only for games that have just come out and they haven't gotten around to
ripping them out of there. Wow. Like, they will have, for like DS games, for instance, once they have the time for some lackey to actually do this, they take them all out of boxes and put the boxes somewhere in the back and put all of the games, they file all of the games in like CD sleeves. And then when you take the empty box off the shelf, they put the game in that box and send you on your way. And then they put a new empty box on the shelf.
Huh. Yeah.
Out of their pile of boxes.
Interesting. So to make good, they give like $50 in store credit for future games if you bought that game, if you pre-ordered the game. There, it's unclear whether anybody who like walked in and got a game without the coupon will get anything at all.
Huh.
It's interesting, you know.
I mean, they're just a dying animal, right? I mean, they're like, it's...
They're not dying enough. They didn't like buy Kongregate. Like, you know, they're definitely got some money to throw around.
Well, I don't mean they're dying in that they're not making money. I think they recognize that there is no future in a brick and mortar video game store.
I guess, and they don't want to accelerate that future by having online be a thing. Sure.
I mean, it's just like no amount of them being assholes is ever going to surprise me, right? Like, they've never done anything that I thought, oh, cool. It's like, hey, let's advertise Legends of Zork.
Yeah.
Neat.
You were saying
we could now that it's dead.
Yeah. You were saying that World of Warcraft made some.
Oh, yeah, I don't know if this happened in a recent patch or if this was just a thing that they were talking about in a recent patch, but I read a description of changes, and this was like a dev forum post or whatever. They decided to like fix threat. They decided to like their take on the alteration of the like tank DPS healer holy trinity.
I mean, do you want to explain what threat is, how that works for people who've never played World of Warcraft?
Do we need to? Okay, so
it's just how much a monster hates you.
All right, so the way that an encounter works in an MMO is that like if you are a caster, you don't have very many hit points. If you are a healer, you don't have very many hit points. If you are a tank, you have a ton of hit points. And so the tank will start fighting a monster and convince the monster to do all of its damage to the tank, and the healer heals the tank and the DPS fires
the monster.
Missiles at the monster. Yeah. And the tank's job is to make sure that the monster stays more pissed off at him than he gets pissed off at the healer for healing or the DPS for shooting missiles.
So typically the tank will do very little damage, but the stuff that he does makes the monster really angry.
They have abilities that generate a lot of extra threat.
Yeah.
I guess Blizzard has decided that... So, and what you have to do in serious play is you have to have these, like, fucking add-on meters installed to make sure that you don't accidentally cast one too many fireballs too quickly and the tank loses threat. And so then the monster comes and attacks you, and then the healer has to waste a bunch of time healing you instead of the tank, and so it just fucks up everybody's buzz. Mellow. It harshes everybody's mellow, is what
marshes
I meant to say.
Everyone's
I mean,
mellow.
there were specific abilities that they gave tanks to when somebody accidentally pulled aggro.
Sure. They made that a game, but the threat was always invisible. Right?
That was interesting. Like, I remember playing with some people who were very new to the game and didn't really know what was going on, and they in the just sort of single player campaign thought that attacks were better. That generated a lot of threat.
Because
they didn't understand what that meant.
It was just like a weird thing. It's a weird thing. It is not at all intuitive. Like
it's really never explained.
Have to understand it. It's not explained. And there's never a thing. There's never a point where it's meaningful as you're learning to play the character, right? But it is critical. It is an absolutely critical concept for group play.
Yeah.
And so what they, I guess, have decided to do is to just make that not a thing anymore. And the way that they've done it is by just tripling the threat generated by all tanking abilities across the board. So you just no longer can you do too much damage and pull
unless your tank is
away from the tank.
Terrible.
Unless your tank is terrible or if you attack the wrong dude or whatever.
Right.
You have to really fuck up for the tank to lose threat. And I think that that's probably fine. I think that that's probably
it was. It was almost never fun when somebody pulled aggro, right? Like, that was definitely like, oh, God, somebody pulled aggro. Or if you did it, you felt like a retard. Or, you know,
yeah, like, it was like, oh, I guess I was too good at casting fireballs. Yeah. You know, which, like, why should you have to worry? But, like, your job as the guy who wants to shoot fireballs at a monster until it dies should be to shoot as many fireballs as fast as you can at the monster and kill it as fast as possible. And if that's not, you know, if skillful play means holding yourself back, like, that's not fun. That's,
I mean, the argument. It is a kind of, yeah, it is definitely a kind of play that you can get behind, but it's not necessarily the best kind of play.
It is weird, though, in a world where threat is not a thing, that threat is still a thing in so many, like, a lot of classes still have abilities to dump threat, right? Like, so the hunter, for instance, had an ability called Feign Death, where you would pretend that you died, and that just made the monster forget that you existed.
They are still going to be, like, in the solo play, they're still going to be playing with their pet.
Oh, sure. Feign Death is Feign Death is a bad example, right? Like, the priest had, like, Fade, which just got rid of a bunch of the aggro.
Temporarily.
That a monster had for you. That's meaningless now.
I think mages dumped threat by ice blocking and... There were other ways to dump threat as well that other classes have had.
Yeah, which, and those abilities, like, you know, they need to come up with something else for those abilities to do, or, you know, they could just get rid of the abilities.
Yeah.
Right? Because people, like, I mean, World of Warcraft characters have way too many fucking abilities.
I think almost all of them had secondary abilities, had secondary effects.
Well, I mean, because I think their goal was like, wait a minute, this is a thing that all it does is dump threat. Like, who the fuck cares in the solo game? Like, this is not exciting. You're like, ooh, this looks cool. What does this do? Oh, nothing. Right. This does nothing.
Well, in the solo game, it stops that monster from attacking you.
Well, it depends on if there's something...
Trains off to... its initial starting location or whatever, right?
If you Feign Death, if you Feign Death, will reset.
Most of the other abilities don't.
I mainly played a rogue and a druid, which was basically a rogue. So, because my threat dumping was turning invisible.
Right.
And you got to think about Facebook paying as bounties for people finding security holes.
Yeah, have you heard about that?
I haven't.
So, like, I mean, this is something that we kind of had done when we sort of had our game development in early days, was, you know, you sort of reward people for finding security bugs that they point out and don't, like, just destroy your game with or whatever.
We didn't give them money. We gave them swords.
Well, we gave them something, right? But, like, Facebook, there's nothing exciting that Facebook can do, and so they just give you cash.
If you can inject SQL into our skeleton, we will give you a sweet sword.
They've given out about 40. They've done this for the past 3 or 4 weeks, and they've given out, like, $40,000.
Huh.
The bounties are all, like, 500 bucks or more, depending on the severity of the issue. There was one $5,000 one, and then there's, like, some guy who's made, like, $7,000 from...
That's, like, a pretty interesting solution.
Yeah, just, like, sort of outsourcing security.
Yeah.
Which, you know, why not? Right? Like, and then
people are trying it anyway, and you'd rather have the good people trying it than the bad. And, like, who likes Facebook enough to... Like, we have always had the benefit of, like, being well-liked by our user base, and people want to help us with stuff. But, like, I don't know anybody, even people who love Facebook, fucking hate Facebook.
Yeah.
So, like, what self-respecting, like...
is going to do it for free.
Unix dweeb is going to be like, oh, I found a vulnerability in Facebook. I better warn the nice folks at Facebook so that they can continue to...
I mean, yeah. So, like, you know, after the Fire Sheep thing came out, they launched their, like, HTTPS version of it or whatever and stuff like that. So, like, they've definitely got some mind on security or whatever.
I kind of hate the number of man hours that are just destroyed in... the, like, security arms race.
I mean, that's a thing that has to happen, right?
No, it's not. It's a thing. It is a thing that the end result is that the world is exactly as good as it would be if none of that shit had ever happened, right? It has to happen because there are assholes in the world. And I don't like those assholes wasting their time being assholes any more than I like Facebook or whatever organization having to pay people to update their security shit. Like, I don't know. It's frustrating to me. Like, you know, just like the amount of time that people spend pirating games versus the amount of time that people spend developing new DRM to try to stop the games from being pirated, right? Like, if...
I mean, you'll notice that a lot of indie people have just been like, you know, try to pay me for what I'm doing.
Yeah, sure.
And they're doing fine.
Sure.
it's the tricky bit is when it's a faceless organization. Like, you know, you don't feel, I think people do not feel as bad walking into a Walmart and shoplifting something as they do going into, you know, Jan's discount baked goods or whatever, right? Like, you know, like,
I don't know if I actually believe that that's true. I think people, population. I think you and I don't. I think people feel bad about stealing from a person more than they feel bad about stealing from an organization. But I think Jan's Baked Goods is an organization in most people's eyes.
It probably isn't somewhere in between, right?
Like, I mean, do they feel bad about stealing from a Papa John's pizza because there's like a dude's name in the title of it?
He seems like such a nice man, though.
He really does.
Yeah.
He's got his picture of him on the website.
He has better ingredients. Let's steal them.
The only other cool thing that I read about this past week was IBM building the largest data storage array that's ever been built, as far as we're aware. They made a 120 petabyte hard drive, which is, for to give you an idea what that is, that's 120 million gigabytes.
So 120 mega gigabytes. No, 120 giga gigabytes.
I don't even know.
Giggity.
Yeah.
So giggity, giggity.
It's 200,000 hard drives in an array. So like,
how many issues of Jugs of Milk magazine could you scan and store
a lot
in 120 petabyte hard drive?
Oh, that's
a lot. I bet they're all fucking spindle drives, though, so they're all going to be fucking broken in six months.
They, like, it's got some crazy redundancy stuff, and it's got, like you just...
Crazy redundancy stuff?
Yeah. They send out a file, and it can be written on, like, thousands of drives at the same time. So
it's like RAID 10,000.
Exactly. No, it's got some crazy custom RAID software for like just crazy fast write times and read times and stuff.
Remember
like
earlier when we were trying to make jokes about RAID the computer term and RAID the bug spray?
Yeah.
And none of them were funny at
all. Yes, I do remember that.
That was great.
Yeah, that was good times.
I read about, just before we started tonight, some dude built a primitive but functioning 2D version of Minecraft in Minecraft using redstone circuits and the redstone torches that are basically LEDs. So
he discovered Minecraft's asshole and crawled up it.
Yeah. it's insane. I linked the movie on minimumsafedistance.org, available online at minimumsafedistance.org, and check it out. It's nuts. And if you click through and watch it on YouTube, he has a second video where he goes behind the scenes and shows you where all the circuits and everything are. It's insane. It's gigantic.
It's one of these things where he didn't actually build it by hand. It's one of the, like, he generated it in a computer.
I can't imagine he could have. I don't think he could have done it by hand.
No. So are there like regular tools now at this point for taking your circuit diagrams and converting them into...
There must be, yeah. I mean, he did a lot of... I think he probably built the basic structure of it and then went in and tweaked it and added some stuff, because he's done things like all the circuitry runs across wool blocks, and he's color-coded all of the wool so that he knows which circuit is which. And he put a minecart run through it, so you can take a little train to go from the control panel where you actually play the game into the guts. And
that's nuts.
There's like pistons that run some of it. Yeah. it's madness. It's
crazy.
Really awesome. But yeah.
Huh. Emergent systems.
Yep.
So this week's assignment, Might and Magic fucking 3.
Ooh.
Yeah, you guys don't care.
It was all right.
I wanted to care.
Philistines.
I wanted to like it.
What was your experience?
Well, at first I was having a lot of trouble with the mouse controls, because when I would click to try and move forward, one third of the time it wouldn't register the click, and another third of the time it would register two clicks. So that was extremely awkward until I worked out what the keyboard controls were.
Yeah,
the game has phenomenal keyboard controls.
Yeah,
yeah.
But so I figured that out, and then I wandered around town a bit, and was kind of confused because all the scenery was very samey looking, and then I kind of started to get my bearings. And
did you look at the map in the manual of town?
No, I haven't looked at the manual. I started with the pre-generated characters, so I had the cartography skill, so I had the in-game.
Yeah, map, but you start with cartography, but you don't start with direction sense.
Yeah, like in the second town, you find a guy that will train you direction sense, and then you can tell which way you're facing on the map.
Yeah, but I wandered around and I found like I figured out kind of what I think the little gibbering gargoyles around the frame of the screen mean, and I was like, oh, this guy's shouting at me. Maybe that means there's a secret door. So I kicked the wall, and there was totally a secret door, and then a bunch of rats flooded out of it and killed me.
I spent a good half hour trying to kill those rats without anybody dying.
Weird. And I mean, I overlook all this because I've played all this. I've played this game before a bunch of times, but I got super into it this time. Like, so good.
So,
I love it so much.
So, okay. The very first thing I did was find those rats.
Yeah.
And they, like, killed two of my party members the first time I fought them. I was like, what the fuck? So then I reloaded, started a totally new game, went there again, and then killed the rats without losing anybody. But, like, my healer was knocked unconscious. I was like, huh. I wonder if I can do this without anybody getting knocked unconscious or dying. And I must have fought them 20 times. And, like, every fight was completely different. Like, sometimes I would lose three people. Sometimes I wouldn't lose anybody. Like, I was like, why are the fights so random? Like, crazily disparate?
I mean, I think the fights
from time to time
are that random when you are fighting stuff that is above your level. It is a very poorly signposted game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have one quest at the beginning, which you cannot vaguely complete at the beginning. Like, you have to go level for a ton.
Not a ton. It doesn't take... Like, it is a very easy, very friendly game, but it starts out very hard, which is weird. The monsters in the dungeon beneath the first town are significantly easier to kill than the monsters in the first town. The monsters outside the first town are way easier to kill than the monsters in the first town.
Why is it done that
way? I don't know why every town has a bunch of hard monsters in it when you get there. And you kill them all and then they're gone. They don't respawn. But it's like, oh, this world sucks. All the towns are overrun with either rats or skeletons or
zombies
ninjas
or whatever. Like, so yeah. So like I finally got to the second town and I just had forgotten to save and like was doing fine. I'd like gone to all the NPCs and I open up this door and it was just this room filled with monsters and I just had no hope
of
beating them.
To be fair, there was
a
sign on that door that said something like Halls of the Dead or something.
I don't think it was that. It was like crematorium or something. I don't know. It was like, it was not obvious
room
that it was going to be
skeletons that will murder your ass.
Like almost murder all the other cut places, there was at least like just a gate where you could look in and be like, oh, I don't want to go in there. But like
what level?
Just
what level were you when you went to the second town?
Seven, maybe.
Huh. I feel like you should have been able to do it.
The room was filled with monsters, and I couldn't escape.
Did you figure out how the
guilds... I wasn't fully healed when I went.
Did you figure out how the guilds worked? Okay, so did you ever go and get all the? Did you ever donate at the temples?
A couple times. Like, all of my characters donated, like, 3 or 4 times.
And did you do it until you got the blessings?
Nope.
Okay. So...
Okay, so... But all of my characters donated 3 or 4 times, and nothing changed. I was like, well this is clearly doing nothing.
If the first thing that you do is go to the temple and donate 3 times on a character, then you get 4 really powerful buffs.
Okay.
Right? And I don't know... How I think it is like an amount of gold that you have to donate that is based on your character level to get the buff for a day. But like there are all of these places around town where you can like you can go and drink from a well and it like quadruples your hit points for the rest of the day.
Okay.
Or something. Like there is so like if you exhaustively explore everything kind of spiraling out from town, and it's weird because you can't at first, because you have to go to the second town, everybody has to learn to swim, or you can't explore the water spots.
Right.
You have to have at least 2 people trained in mountaineering, which costs like 5,000 gold a person to train, before you can go through the mountain spots. At which point, you just start exploring, like, the space right next to Fountainhead has, like, a cache of treasure with 25,000 gold in it. That...
What?
By being able to explore the mountains, you just find... all of this stuff. Like, you start finding more of the, like, monster layers that you can destroy and get a bunch of experience and stuff.
Huh. Yeah. The fact that you get so many more experience from, like, going into a hut and clicking yes, then like killing 10 groups of monsters. I was like, what the hell?
Well, I mean, it doesn't bother you in World of Warcraft to get more experience for a quest to kill 10 rats than you got to kill those 10 rats, right? And this is exactly the same thing.
Though. I think you get, maybe 30 or 40% of the experience from the 10 rats, again, in the quest experience.
So eliminating the goblin threat is a bigger accomplishment than killing 6 goblins.
But I didn't know I was trying to eliminate the goblin threat.
Well, why does the world have to explain itself to you?
Why would I go into some hut, see a dented suit of armor, and be like, clearly I need to light this hut on fire?
It says of goblin manufacture. Like, the text is...
That's where goblins come from.
Oh, wait, maybe half the goblins in this world are awesome. Maybe the first few that you find are ambiguous, I guess. Like, you can never, like, burn down... Oh, you find a fortune teller's wagon. Do you want to talk to the fortune teller or just burn that shit to the ground for no reason? But... this is just one of my favorite videos.
And it was like, I was definitely getting into it until I like lost an hour of
losing
progress.
A bunch of progress when you super haven't saved is what, like, that's what makes me stop playing it every time. It's so easy to save though.
Yeah, but you're saving over your old game.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like,
so you don't want to save like when you're potentially in danger.
Is there a time limit to the game?
Your character's age.
What?
Yeah.
Like
there is a calendar, and your character's age like 1 year per year, and as they get older, their stats get worse. There are places that you can spend gold to get younger.
Wait, but do you really spend years worth of time playing the game?
Yeah, I mean, there's a day-night cycle. I don't know. Yeah, remember how
but
many
I mean,
days
I spent like 30 days, and I was like, you know, I had leveled 7 times or something. Yeah. Like that.
There, but I mean, eventually, like there are things that you can only do. Like there are. In-game things that become active only on one day of the game year.
Ugh.
Right? So you potentially have to just, like, go there.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that's like... I mean, Ultima was full of that shit, right? Like, the Moon Gates, there were places that you could only get to one day out of every 100 days of game time or whatever. And I don't think that there's anything that you have to do to, like, complete the main quest of the game. Like, it is this huge open world filled with stuff for you to interact with and ways to like level up your characters and get awesome randomly generated loot. Like, it just makes me so happy.
So the loot was an area where I was beginning to get frustrated as well. So from the fact that there were leather short swords,
right.
And then also leather armor.
Because you could get like iron leather armor, and because they pick a substance and then they pick an object,
right.
And there's no logic applied to like what substances can be, you know, what objects can be what substances.
So crystal
and
plate
one of the
now.
Object types is leather armor,
yeah.
So it's like padded armor.
So and then I was like trying
it's
to give
coral
give,
padded armor. It's super comfortable.
Give my dudes the best armor that they could wear. But I had no idea what the best armor they could wear was, and like I had no idea what the different stats of the armor was. Like, it was just, I had to put on a piece of armor, go back and look at my stats.
It is a little weird that there's like nowhere that tells you, like, okay, is scale armor better than splint armor? It's like,
yeah, no idea. One costs more than the other, but I you know, which I can assume is probably means it's better.
It is frustrating that when you are in a screen where you can equip things to your dudes, you can't see the value of those things.
Yeah.
And I mean, this predated all of the conventions that we take for granted now.
So I used Detect Magic a couple of times, and all it showed me was the number of charges that something
that
had.
That is all it does. It tells you if anything in your inventory
has
magic, can be used to cast spells. You know, this is what I was talking about, the crystal sword of ropes.
Right.
That's like a sword that you can use to cast create rope.
Huh. I had a horn of ropes.
Yeah. You could have blown that horn and some ropes would have come out, and you could have used those ropes to climb down. What pisses me off about every fucking dungeon entrance is that you have to have ropes to get down there from the top, but when you get down there, there's a ladder.
Yeah.
Like, where the fuck was that? Like, how am I using that to go up? It's a one-way ladder. Sorry.
Yeah, like, just a weird shit like that.
It ends in a trampoline.
Like, this is clearly, clearly better than Eye of the Beholder.
Yeah.
And, like, but then, like, applying, you know, current game gameplay logic.
Oh, God, yes, it did.
I didn't feel like
so much better. It looks so much better. The environments are why could I not get through some blocks of forest? You have to have a skill to go through dense trees.
Why doesn't it tell me that?
I don't know.
I did not read through the manual.
All bullshit story. Yeah.
And it explains a bunch of stuff, but it's like you have to read 40 pages of like kind of like bad prose.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I wish that it did explain some of that. You know, I wish that it explained more like, okay, so magic users can't wear anything more than padded armor or whatever. Like robes, not armor. Robes are a thing that you wear over your armor, for instance. So like there are, you have like 15 equipment slots that you can equip stuff in.
You don't see what they are.
You don't see what they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is weird, the things that are overlooked. And the things that are overlooked are not because of a lack of attention to detail on the part of good old John Van Caningham, but the fact that the state of the art of video games had not advanced to the point where those were things that you could do. I mean, a paper doll that you put inventory items on, that was probably Dungeon Master introduced that, which I think came before Might and Magic 3. But
they probably had been working on Might and Magic 3 for a long time before. Yeah. I was definitely getting into it. This game grabbed me in a way that Eye of the Beholder just didn't.
Yeah.
I was getting excited about it, but
this game is an order of magnitude better than Eye of the Beholder.
But it is just hard to go back and look at it and think of it as being something that I would want to spend a bunch of time on now, given the state of the other games that are out now.
Sure. You know? There is a simplicity to this. This is a game that you can hold all of the systems in your head.
Sure.
And that is a thing that makes it extremely appealing to me relative to a modern RPG.
Did you start taking notes?
I wrote down one thing that I saw written on a wall.
Because like they're like
south, north, northeast, west, or something.
Quests that not quests, but there are like, you know, like subtle little things that you can do, and then there's also like you have to remember the names of the teleport points and stuff like that. And
yeah, I just remember all the names of the teleport points from having played it before. Also, like you read that thing that says you can go to the arena. Going to the arena is a fantastic place to level up. Although again, the first arena fight is way, way harder than the second and third and fourth and fifth ones. It's weird. I don't know what is going on with the balance.
Yeah, that is super strange.
In that game. Because you couldn't bring in a party from somewhere else. I don't know if they wanted you to...
How did you make your own characters if you wanted to?
You go to the inn, and then you can create new characters in there and move people in your party. Like, did you get to the point in the first dungeon where you rescue those dudes?
No.
I think that was actually in the second town. The dungeon in the second town, you rescue some... You rescue, like, another cleric and another fighter who...
Do you have two more character slots?
You do. Okay. For hirelings. You can't bring normal people with you, but you can have hirelings in there that just cost gold every time you rest, or they go back to the inn.
Could you play a game without resting? Like,
you probably could, but I don't think that there's any other way to get mana back.
Okay, that was my question, because like I
so if you
was
didn't
healing
use
up a lot
casters, then you could, but that would be
how would you heal?
You wouldn't. I mean, that you could go pay for it at the temple, right?
Or you could swap gold for healing.
There's once you've cleaned out Fountainhead, there's a fountain where you can trade gold for experience 1-to-1.
Wow.
Which is weird. Gold becomes really plentiful. Like it you never really stress about it, and you never really stress about the gems that you use to cast spells either, which makes that a little less interesting as a resource management problem. But
the bug where you get to shoot multiple rounds of arrows made fights a lot easier.
Yeah, it did. If you just, I don't know what the deal was with the controls on that. There had to have been some fix for some other issue. But like, if you just hammered on the shoot key, you'd get to shoot twice for every time, and if
all of your characters had bows,
all of your characters have ranged weapons, you're doing just huge amounts of damage. And if you just happen to find like a good enchanted ranged weapon, then that's just huge.
Yeah.
Like, because you get to fire off so many rounds if you see them coming. Like, if they sneak up on you, or if you're in a really twisty dungeon or whatever, then it's less of a...
If you have to break open a door and they're right behind the door or whatever. Yeah.
Man, it's so good. The thing about the not knowing about the items is that, I mean, maybe that's a thing that they were like, well, if you care that much about those numbers, you can start writing this stuff down, right? You can just say, all right, well, I know that a scale mail, when I take it off, my armor class goes down by X.
Sure.
And then a lapis scale mail compared to a regular scale mail does this much.
Yep. I was tempted to just look at a spoiler because I'm sure that somebody's already done that.
If you looked at a list of item spoilers for that game, it is remarkably short. There are remarkably small, for the depth that appears to be in there, there are a remarkably small number of prefixes and suffixes that can go on the things. It is weird to like a leather short sword. Like it's funny, and they probably thought it was funny when they made that, right? Like, let's just not restrict it. See what happens. Get a lot of real shitty gear. I have no idea if there was like a budget. Like if they say, all right, in this treasure chest, there are a bunch of randomly generated magic items, because I would find like a cache of items and their sell values were like 30, 27, 17, 27, 15,000.
Right.
And I don't know if that's because the treasure chest said like, all right, there should be one really good item in here, or if it was just literally random.
Hmm.
I mean, I think the gear gets better as you go along. I think you stop finding, you know, leather armor or glass leather armor. You know, I don't know if that's actually ever a thing that you find.
I found a bunch of crystal stuff, but that seemed to be actually pretty good.
Yeah. You can find pearl stuff that I think mostly just increased the sell value.
Huh.
But it might have also been, there might have also granted resistance to elements. Like, you had a bunch of elemental resistance that I don't know that you could see.
Yeah.
A lot of the stats in the character sheet you could click on for extra details about them. Like, you click on the skills thing, and you could see the list of skills that you have.
I could never get anything by just clicking on the list of skills, though. It didn't explain them.
No, it doesn't. Which is why I thought it would have done so in the manual. Like, I remember in the earlier Might and Magic games, and maybe even in the later ones, like, it tells you what the skills are and what they do.
Yeah.
The guys who teach you the skills, they say what it will do. You can get in the guilds, you can get a description of every spell. It's not super helpful in a
lot
of cases.
Was the Raven's Guild the magic users?
Yeah.
Guild? Okay.
Did you not?
Oh, well, so I talked to the guy, and he's like, you know, I'll give you a membership to the Raven's Guild, but he says, which character do you want to join? And I was like, I don't know. Which character?
So you didn't know which character should join the Magicians?
Okay, Guild? Well, you can't get in unless you have a membership, right? And it asks you which can. Okay.
You just can't buy anything without a membership.
Okay. I never got in because I was never there at the right hours or whatever. So
see, that's a problem, right? Like the shops are only open during the day, and the training hall is only open during the day, and the taverns and the guilds are only open at night. So you will often rest just to pass time. So if you never bought any additional spells beyond the spells that you started with,
yeah,
then,
I never did.
No wonder it was hard, because like the spells get crazy powerful.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, so, like, but I was mostly just attacking with everybody anyway, because it was just easier to just hit A.
Sure.
Because the casting was a pain in the ass compared to just hitting attack.
Yeah, until you got to the point where you were like, all right, I'm mostly just going to be casting the same spell, so it's just like A, and then when it comes around to cast or you go CC, and it just casts whatever spell he has readied.
Sure.
You know, and then the healer has cure wounds, and so you're like CC F1, CC F2.
Right.
To like reference your players. Like, the keyboard controls are so good.
Comparatively, they're really solid.
I'm gonna keep playing it. I think I'm actually gonna, I don't know that I've ever beaten Might and Magic 3, and I think I'm gonna play through the game to completion.
Cool.
This time.
I still have a host of old assignments that I plan on finishing.
I don't remember. I think that Might and Magic 4 is the one that I finally beat, where you like build a castle for yourself.
Oh, that's neat.
You do all these things and you get like King's mega credits, and then you spend those mega credits on like build me a keep, and then you've got like a castle that you can run around in.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then you build me a dungeon, and then in that dungeon is where you find the final boss. It's like, wait a minute. What?
Huh.
You know. All right, so we decided to do something a little weird so that we can actually... Half of the three of us are leaving for Dragon Con tomorrow.
It's going to hurt me a lot.
This is two-thirds of the average of us.
Yes. So we wanted something we could play on a Game Boy or on a phone or something. So Riff suggested Metroid, original NES Metroid,
yeah,
which is pretty easy to get on an emulator if you want to play
it. It's also an ambassador game.
It is an ambassador game.
So if you have a 3DS, you can play it there. You can
hopefully it doesn't put the ass in Ambassador, but I'm relatively certain it's going to. Out.
Yeah, so this is a game that I am super, super, super fond of. I played the crap out of it when I was a kid. I've probably beaten it like 6 times.
Yeah, I'm interested because I love Metroidvania games, and Metroid 2 on the Game Boy was probably my favorite Game Boy game,
mm-hmm,
but I never played the original.
Okay.
So it's
when I played it, you know, in grade school, I had the Nintendo Power with the map.
Hmm.
So maybe that makes a big difference. Although now I feel like I would just remember the map because I've played it so much.
I bet I have the Nintendo Power with the map in my garage.
Yeah.
I have like the first 5 or 6 years of Nintendo Power in a box.
And I think about that. I think about how a lot of the Nintendo games that I played, I had these external reference to use to help me.
It's kind of like the internet.
Which is, yeah.
Except there was way less porn in Nintendo Power.
Well, it was all fold-ins.
Howard and Nestor.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm curious to see because, you know, we've been playing a bunch of games that you have been super fond of from your youth, and this is a game that I am extremely fond of from my youth.
Yep.
And I'm also curious whether it will hold up in my
Metroid, everyone.
Non-youth.
Metroid. Hey, how about some listener mail, guys?
Sure.
Let's see. There's some Twitters. /B says, been playing a lot of Might and Magic 3, though I cheated at the start to get 2 million gold. I can't sleep at night because of it. Yeah, you should be ashamed of yourself. You didn't need
especially
that 2
if you can just trade
gold.
It one for one for experience.
Yeah, you're totally cheating. NA48 writes, got a Mac, only playing Morrowind and Minecraft so far. What good games are out there to play on a Mac? You guys can answer this question.
There's some good stuff on Steam. I know Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed... No, maybe not the first one, but I know the second one and Brotherhood have come out for the Mac.
Are those games any good?
I thought they were pretty good. The first one was okay. The second one was quite good. I never got around to trying Brotherhood.
I mean,
but I heard Brotherhood is fantastic.
All the Blizzard games and all the Valve games are out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everything, all the Half-Life series.
Yeah. Have you heard of this game called World of Warcraft?
Yeah.
You might like that.
No, but I mean, like, you know, like you could play StarCraft 2, you could play the, you know, old StarCraft, you could play
the Urquan Masters.
You could play Urquan Masters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boatcraft.
But yeah, Half-Life's Portal is good.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Boat Life.
You could do indie games like Braid. You could do...
Yeah, Braid's on Steam. What else? Space Cam, I mean, we liked. You may have heard us talking about that. I mean,
and you can watch a DVD of the movie Space
almost
Camp.
Almost any of the games that we've played have been on, if they weren't on like a DS, they were on we were playable on a Mac.
Yeah.
So.
Cyber34 says, you should get Kevin to try League of Legends, or maybe it would be less confusing than WoW PvP for you, Zach. I don't know. I've heard a lot of really bad things about people playing League of Legends and these other... So they were,
oh, about the community?
People are calling them MOBAs, but then Gabe Newell, there's like a picture of Gabe Newell saying, you call them ARMS. No, ARTS, not ARMS.
What is League of Legends?
I don't. It's a MOBA. It's an amoeba.
Multiplayer.
Like, massively online battle arena?
Okay.
So, like, my understanding is that it is some kind of Warcraft 3 custom map that became a genre where you have, like, heroes that you control that have abilities that level up, but then there are also, like...
It's like a super elaborate capture the flag.
There are, like, lanes where you can spawn NPCs in the lanes, or NPCs spawn in the lanes and then fight each other. And
isn't
then that, you're
isn't
also
that Dota? I mean, that's what
around.
Is that?
Yeah, it is.
So MOBA, it's just a.
Have you played Dota?
Kinda. I like tried it, and I was like, "Oh, this is way too. I am so far behind the curve here that I don't think this is worth."
Yeah, my understanding is that you just get shit on a lot by your teammates when you're learning to play this, and so I have so little interest in playing video games with most of the people on Earth who play video games. Yeah. And that's what keeps me away from Team Fortress 2.
Not a multiplayer gamer.
But we'll set up our own server and it'll be fine.
I mean, Dota 2 is coming out.
We have our own.
And there are going to be a bunch of new... there's a video game hot dog, Team Fortress
2. No, I know. But we'll, like, whenever we want to play a game on the internet, we can set up our own server. And all of our listeners are awesome.
Yeah, I don't know how that... So there's like, what, Heroes of New Earth is like League of Legends, like Dota. And Dota 2 is about to come out.
Yeah, by Valve.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah. I don't know. There's been a lot of talk about that. It seems like the kind of thing that like might be fun, but I don't know.
I think the people who are into it will be really into it, which is fine.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Good for them.
So Richard Gislux asked some questions in the forum thread from like June.
Sweet.
That we still haven't gotten through. Minecraft will be fully released on November 11th. Minecraft or Portal 2 is game of the year. You know,
I don't know if Minecraft is can really be technically said to be a game of this year since everyone's been playing it since.
I don't know.
But it's all been alpha and beta stuff.
That game of the year is a distinction that I feel like I can meaningfully bestow on something, right? Like what is the game that I've had the most fun playing this year? Probably Master of Magic. So my game of the year is MicroProse's 1994 offering Master of Magic.
Game of the sort of year? The goatsy? the fartsy?
Yeah. Fart command.
Of the two... That's tough. I've definitely probably spent more hours on Minecraft than Portal 2. Mm. Portal 2 is a game that I played through and am done with, and Minecraft is something that, like, if I allow myself, I can just sort of spend an endless amount of time playing. And
yeah, I mean, they both rule, and I'd be sad if either one of them ceased to exist.
Yeah.
Or if, like, I got hit by a bus and both of them ceased to exist.
Minecraft is only as much fun as sort of the environments that you build and the people that you have played it with, I think. Yeah. So that's a very subjective thing, whereas Portal 2... has a really compelling single player experience.
I also feel like even if they do hit their November official release date for Minecraft, they're not going to be done making it. I mean, they've said as much that they're going to continue adding stuff to it for the foreseeable future.
So I wonder what does that even mean?
Another price increase?
Sure.
I mean, they could.
Yeah.
No, I know, but I'm just saying like
50 bucks and it would be a bargain.
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely.
You know, nobody would have known that going in, but...
Yeah, I definitely am pretty pleased that I only had to pay 10 euros for it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Back in the day.
And they're on a, you know, they're on like an indie schedule, right? Like they have as much money as they want, and so their goal is to just make the best possible product, and so it's going to take for fucking ever, right? You know, I mean, like they've just got this problem that you get when you're good at your job, where it's like you're not ever able to do it fast enough to suit anybody else. And so it's just, you know,
that's a real problem when you're a tailor. Because if you can't suit anybody, then you're fucked.
Oh, Kevin.
Or when you're a lawyer, you can't bring suit against anyone.
Yeah.
Or if you're a frauderist and you can't rub your suit against anyone. And by suit, I mean boner. Right. That's what you were talking about with the tailor, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think about the shooter genre, says Ridgishy Lock also. You know, it's like any other genre. There's good games and bad games in it. Like Deus Ex is a shooter and is really good.
Yeah.
Half-Life is good. Clive Barker's Undying.
Portal is technically a shooter.
It's a very good shooter. You're shooting.
Good.
I mean, I haven't had any interest in like the more modern cover-based type shooters. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Mass Effect.
Yeah. I mean, Mass Effect.
I liked
Mass
Effect 2.
Yeah.
That was definitely more of an RPG than a shooter.
Yeah, I liked the RPG elements and I liked the conversations and the characters, but I didn't care so much for the combat.
I don't know what I liked about that because I didn't really like the combat. I didn't also really like the conversation. Huh. I got tired of. I really hate cutscenes. I hate it when a game is like, hey, look, story. Been a long time between you making any choices, and I don't consider choices in conversations to be choices. Right now I'm just saying things. Which of the Zelda games have you played? I think I've played all of them. I think I have literally played every Zelda game except for the CDI bullshit.
I have not significantly played the original one or the second one because I didn't have my own NES. I played the Game Boy. I think I've played all of the handheld ones. I played the Super Nintendo one and the Wii one, although that is another one at which I stopped right before the last dungeon.
Yeah, I did the opposite. I played the original Nintendo ones and a couple of the handheld ones, but like the middle ones I didn't do Majora's Mask or
yeah.
The Windwalker.
I didn't play Majora's Mask or Wind Waker.
I didn't play a lot of Majora's Mask. I played Wind Waker up to the last castle and then just quit.
Oh no, I did. I played some of Wind Waker, yeah. No, you know Jim what? I didn't had a get, copy, but I didn't play it to completion or anything.
I didn't get to the last castle. I got to the point where you had some bullshit sailing around to 64 different places to collect 64 different bits of map that led you to 64 different Triforce fragments. I might be exaggerating that number a little bit. I know that I was supposed to find 2/3 of the average number of Triforce fragments per map square. Xbox Pants wrote in the midst of some praise. I think it would be fun if one week you guys went through the entry/winners for some game dev competition like the Ludum Dare and talked about which ones you enjoyed, which ones were interesting, which ones were almost good but had a few problems holding them back, etc. Fun to listen to you guys since you have a slightly different perspective as game developers than the typical game journalist podcasts.
That's an excellent plan.
I always find myself wishing that the game podcasts that I listen to were not done by games journalists because I feel like there is a mindset in there that is like, it leads to a lot of like game of the year discussions. Mm-hmm. And so it leads to a lot of conversations about comparing apples and oranges to determine which one should be put in the crisper.
I saw you yesterday playing Notch's Ludum Dare thing. What did you think of that?
I don't know. It was a kind of a little explore-y Metroidvania first person game that was like okay. You know, I didn't keep playing it. I left the browser window open so that I could keep playing because there's no way to save it, and I didn't want to go through the thing again, but it was like it wasn't really enough to keep me going. I mean, for something that somebody made in 48 hours is like pretty impressive.
Yeah,
right. I was pretty impressed, but I don't know, I didn't stick with it. There was some other game. It was like some moody indie game where you were like running through the snow in super crazy low res and you were just trying to find these 6 things. And one of them, I think, was just a sign that said rape. So I don't know what the story of that was, but
pretty well signposted, I feel like.
I'm not kidding. I mean, that was really...
Huh.
It said something else, or it said like 4 rapes or something. Like it was.
Oh, a bag of 4 rapes.
Yeah, a bag of 4 rapes. Yeah, I don't know what that was. It had a lot of huffing and puffing. There were 2 mechanics. There was a button to huff and a button to puff.
Weird.
All right. Well, that was enough reader mail for a short listener mail segment. And what other things do people do besides reading and listening to viewer mail? Viewer mail.
Oh, before we get to that, I want to, whatever the podcast version is of linking a thing, I found a blog that I think people that like our discussion of all these old games that we've been playing will like. It's crpgaddict.blogspot.com. This guy has made it his mission to play every computer role-playing game that there ever was in chronological order.
To completion?
Not necessarily. He's been playing them to completion if he thought they were worth playing.
Okay.
He's gotten up as far as his most recent post yesterday. It looks to be somewhere near the middle of Ultima 5 is how far he's gotten.
That's a lot. Had to have ground to have covered.
I thought about starting my thing that I was going to do, like where I wrote about the item systems in every game that was listed in that CRPG history book that I read. Mm-hmm. But Wizardry's cross-platform handling of stuff was so inconsistent that I just had no idea where to start. Yeah. And so I just got kind of screwed up in it. I mean, I guess I could just look at PC versions of stuff, but then there wouldn't be like Dungeon Master or whatever.
You can make exceptions for certain stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I could. Yeah, anyway, I didn't really get going on that. There was a surprising amount of stuff going on even in what I thought would be like the simplest itemization scheme, and a totally surprising dearth of information about, like, where did you get these? Like, were there chests? Did monsters drop them? Like, which is as interesting to me as what the items do, right?
Yeah, right.
What are the mechanisms that the designer put in for you to actually acquire these items? And so, yeah, it was weird.
Huh.
I don't want to have to actually play all these games. I should team up with that guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if somebody did want to get a hold of us to send in a town crier mail to us, how do they do that, Kevin?
Yeah, you could tweet us at VGHotDog. They could send us an email at VGHotDog@gmail.com. Not at VGHotDog@gmail.com. Forget the first at. Just VGHotDog@gmail.com. And then they could also just check out the website, videogameshotdog.com.
That's got links to everything.
Which has links to everything.
And it has a picture of the Stalfos.
Yes.
And the Master.
It's a real website now. So you can click on things.
It's a real website now, even though it has literally nothing that the old website did not have. Yeah. It does have the list of the list of games that I only publish in the iTunes summary that I guess a lot of people don't get to see is now visible in there.
And
fucking Idle Thumbs ripoff bullshit. I'm such a fraud, guys.
And it's got a cool sword and a skeleton.
I already said that.
Yeah.
Stalfos.
I still want to play Super Columbo NK11 or whatever. I don't even remember.
HK11. Hunter Killer Columbo Robot.
Yes. Oh my god, that sounds awesome.
Oh my god, it's got two glass eyes though. Because he's a robot.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, no, he'd have one glass eye and one metal eye.
Hey, you know, if you listen to the podcast and you like it, give us a favorable review on iTunes. Give us a star rating.
Yeah,
get us the attention that we obviously so richly deserve.
We need points to climb the iTunes leaderboard.
Yeah.
Those seem to be important.
That's how we get our score.
That would be awesome, but
that's I can only get an erection if there is an iTunes review of Video Games Hot Dog that I haven't read yet when I go to check iTunes. So it's like it gets to the point where it's like, hold on, honey, I need to check my phone for a second, and I'm like, oh,
that's
I
sad.
Guess you're gonna go to sleep unsatisfied. I mean, which you would have anyway, but now we're both gonna go to sleep unsatisfied.
Yeah.
So help us out. I mean, me and my boner. Help us.
Me.
Help us. Help you.
And my boner. Sorry.
Good night, everyone.
Have a great week, everyone.